Welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and creative entrepreneur, bringing you interviews, inspiration, and information on writing, publishing options, and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free author blueprint, and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 412 of the podcast. And it's Friday, 11th of January, 2019, as I record this. So today I'm talking about voice first, voice assistants, podcasting and audiobooks with Bradley Metrock, who runs Digital Book World as well as the Alexa conference and has a podcast this week in voice. So today, yes, we are geeking out over voice tech and the potential for authors in a growing voice market. Exciting times. In publishing news this week, Drafter Digital announces promotional price changes that you can schedule, which is awesome because this is something that's super useful. Obviously, Kobo has it already and Apple has it already. So, and Amazon has it, but only if you're in Select. So if you're not, you have to go in and manually change things. So now Drafter Digital allow scheduled price changes, which is very useful. And I'll, as ever, I put all the links in the show notes. And there's quite a few links today because I've got a bit of an intro for today's show. The second thing in publishing, there's been a lot, but this is the thing I've mainly chosen this week, is the Authors Guild survey, which came out this week and really has some... Anything that comes out from the Authors Guild, there's never anything kind of super happy. But basically, it says since 2009, median incomes for authors from writing have fallen by 42%. A few choice pieces picked out by Publishing Perspectives article. Not only did self-published romance and romantic suspense writers report median incomes almost five times higher than the author-related income from the next self-published category of mysteries and thrillers. Also, they said the median author-related income for indie romance was only $50 more in 2017 than 2013, which may indicate a plateau for earnings under current business models. I think this is an interesting statement because what it's saying is, yes, romance authors are still earning more money than other indies, but their income hasn't gone up substantially over time, which I think is interesting. And of course, remember, with all these studies, they are self-selecting. So you decide whether you're going to fill in a survey. It's not like it's from the tax authorities where they actually have some view into people's income. So there's a few other things. It says full-time mid-list and literary writers are also on the verge of extinction, which is like, okay, thanks for that. The organisation points to blockbuster mentality, which is where traditional publishing basically throws 100 books at the charts and hoping that one of them will stick and then basically doesn't continue to invest. Also blaming increases in deep discounting. And this is something I've heard from many traditionally published authors, which is when traditional publishers in particular will do discounting deals with supermarkets. So even if you sell 100,000 copies, you might only get point whatever of a percent of that. Also, low ebook royalty rates of 25%. So this is a really, I think it's a well worth reading the report, and you can go to authorsguild.org and find it there. I'll also link to it in the show notes and also the Publishing Perspectives overview. But what I wanted to do was say, yes, if you take writers as a whole, then, and try and kind of find the median, try and pull out things like that, you're going to miss the granularity of what is going on. And so I wanted to pull out two wonderful writers, two modest women who don't shout too much, to be fair, about what they're doing, and who also have two business models. So I haven't told them I'm doing this, and they do listen to the show. So Lindsay Waroka and Rachel Herron, I am calling you ladies out today because both Lindsay and Rachel have put out blog posts this week as well. So Lindsay Waroka, if you don't know, she's been on the show a number of times, definitely a friend of mine, introvert. In fact, when we did the trip to New Orleans together and we were co-writing with Jay Thorne and Zach Bohannon, Lindsay and I, and all of us, I mean, Jay and Zach, also introverts, we were all like, are we really going to spend time with other people? That's crazy. But Lindsay is a fantasy author, co-host of the Science Fiction and Fantasy Marketing podcast, which I'm sure many of you listen to, which is valid even if you don't write science fiction and fantasy. They have a lot of interesting stuff there about marketing. But Lindsay has a blog post about 8 years of self-publishing and what she's learned. She started publishing in 2010, and she says, by 2013, I was making more than I ever had at my day job, and I'd long since transitioned to writing full time. By 2015, I was making a lot more. And Lindsay doesn't break down her income, but she does say on this blog post that she I've made enough money to buy my house outright and sock away some extra. So Lindsay's definitely in the regular, you know, serious income in the indie space. She says, it was amazing to get to that point, especially since it had been drilled into my head as a kid that nobody makes a living writing fiction and that I should get a degree in business or computer science. So this is interesting. I want to point out a few things that Lindsay does well. So she is prolific. So since she says it, my first novel took 7 years to finish, but in the last 3 years, I've written 10 or more novels each year. So Lindsay is prolific. She has learned to write quality fast, and she writes really long books of like 100,000 words plus because she writes fantasy. So these are not what I do, which are shorter thriller type length. So one of her secrets to success is she writes pretty much every day from what she said to me, she writes long hours and she writes fast and has over 50 books out. And it's funny because, you know, someone said to me the other day, oh, I have this author friend and they have 3 books out and they're just not making any money. And I was like, uh-huh. You know, most indie authors I know, you know, I have 28 books, but I'm like halfway to Lindsay and Lindsay's moves a lot faster than me. So by the time I get to 50, she'll be at like 150. But this is one very important key, and that is number of books out there. Also, Lindsay writes in series. So, and she closes the series boxes. So she'll finish, say, 8 book series, and then readers can binge. And she finishes them pretty quickly. She's very, very good. I'm terrible at this. I keep going and I kind of chop and change between series. Lindsay says, the Dragon Blood series has earned me more over the years than any of my other series, about $900,000 US dollars from the ebooks in that original one since the first book was published in March of 2014. That's just one series. So Lindsay kind of addresses some of the issues about people feeling like time has passed and, you know, you can't do this anymore. She says, I still think there are ways to be seen and find readers without dropping thousands a month. You can still make book one in a series free and use social media, group promos and small, inexpensive ads to get readers to find and download your book. After that, it's up to you and the job you did with the story as to whether those readers will want to continue. So basically, Lindsay is saying, write a series, put book one in the series free, get that book into people's hands however you can. And if they want to carry on, you've done a good job. And I mean, this is what most of us still do, despite the focus on ads these days. I still have a perma-free book one in my Arcane series. Many of us still do this and it works very well, particularly if you're wide on Kobo, on Apple, they do more promotions around first book free in series. So, Lindsay says, as a new author today, I would expect to have to write a series and make the first book free or 99 cents, then I'd expect to write another series and another. If lightning strikes and you get some massive hit, that's awesome, but expect to work, i.e. write, year in and year out to make a living at this. So I love that Lindsay shared this article, and she's very laid back, very chilled. She doesn't write to market. She writes books she enjoys and does, you know, find people who like those stories, but she has, she's not famous, but she's making serious money. So I don't know if Lindsay filled in that survey. I kind of think I did fill in that survey, but I can't remember. I don't know when it was. I want to say I filled it in, but I can't say definitively if I did. But then I also then wanted to come to Rachel Herron, who also has been on this podcast. The last time she was on talking about writing memoir. Rachel has the wonderful How Do You Write podcast, as well as the Writer's Well podcast with Jay Thorne, which is lovely. I love listening to that. They're very positive people. So Rachel posted her income roundup for 2018, and she actually does give numbers. And I think I certainly felt I used to give numbers too, and then you get to a certain point and you don't give numbers anymore. But Rachel combines multiple streams of income. She's making a living from her writing. That's basically how I say it. She has made over $84,000 this year, of which her traditionally published books, and Rachel is hybrid. So her traditional published books are about a quarter of that income. Her indie books are about a quarter of that income. She has a Patreon. She writes essays for her patrons. She also does teaching, speaking, and coaching. So, and a little quote from Rachel, she says, she talks a bit about, and I'll link in the show notes, she talks a bit about how some people say it's just too hard now. And she says, friends, ignore the market. Write what your heart wants to write, what spins you out at night while you're lying in bed trying to sleep. Write what freaks you out and makes you shiver with bliss. Make it breathe with your passion. When you're done writing the book, done revising it at least once, then consider the market. And I love this post from Rachel and from Lindsay this week, because both of them have different business models. So Lindsay is a high production genre fiction writer doing rapid release, doing series, some ads, like, you know, but mostly a kind of rapid release model in a genre that sells well for indies. And Rachel does write, memoir. She's written a number of more literary books. She's got women's fiction. She's writing a thriller at the moment. She's got a non-fiction. And she has these multiple streams of income. And just a reminder again, I make a multi six-figure income from a combination of multiple streams of income. So book sales in all the usual formats. I sell courses. I have affiliate income from the blog. And of course, your wonderful Patreon support of the podcast. And I cover all of that in How to Make a Living with Your Writing. And my writing style has never been high production. I'm not someone who does the high production model. Neither is Rachel. But the point is, you get to choose what your business model is. A business model is actually something that is bringing in money that you can live on. And maybe that's not your goal, in which case, no worries. Knock yourself out writing just for fun or just for extra money, whatever. But if you want to make a living at this, then there are some commonalities, even amongst Lindsay, Rachel, and me, which is you spend time on your writing, you work hard, you put in the hours. It takes time and effort for any career. And if you want a career at this, then there are definitely commonalities, even if your method of income might be different. And if you're not a high production plus ads person, then no worries. There are other ways you can make a living with your writing, like I do, like Rachel does. So if you love writing, I still think this is the best job in the world. So if you saw that Authors Guild report and got depressed, I hope you will feel that I have just given you an antidote to that. And thanks to Lindsay and Rachel for putting out those blog posts this week and giving me an idea of something to talk about. Right, so in the futurist segment this week, this last week as this goes out was CES, the Consumer Electronics Show in Vegas. And Christine, Catherine Rush and Dean Wesley-Smith went along and hopefully they will put out something on it soon. But there were also a lot of blog posts, announcements and things, particularly about the Google Assistant and also Alexa. So I talked to Bradley a couple of weeks ago, so this is kind of an update on what's happened, like even in the last few days. So first of all, Alexa is now in lots of different devices, from kitchen appliances to lighting, smart home devices, lots of new speakers and headphones, as well as TVs, and in car devices. So these Alexa skills, which you can think of equivalent on your phone to like the App Store, Alexa skills are like the App Store for Alexa. And this is kind of where the voice first stuff comes in, because a lot of these devices now are activated by voice. So in this is where I want you to imagine a world where instead of someone going to their computer or picking up their phone and typing best writing and publishing podcast or sci-fi romance novel into Google, now you can ask your device the same question. So maybe you're in the car, or maybe you're in your kitchen and you've got your hands in the sink, you're washing up or something, and you want to know something. You ask, you don't type. And this is, or kids just ask anyway, you know. So this is the challenge for us, SEO for voice, or search engine optimization for voice technology. And I talked to Bradley about that. It's something I'm thinking about a lot as more and more of these home type and life devices are voice activated and voice integrated, because my business is built on SEO. It's how I make the bulk of my income. So that is really important. So Alexa was everywhere, but a massive amount of CES real estate went to Google. Apparently there were posters everywhere with Hey Google on, and they have released a ton of press releases this week about what's going on with the Google Assistant. And this has been really interesting, because although I keep up with what's going on at Google because of particularly translation, which I'll come to, this is really interesting. So while Amazon announced that over 100 million devices with Alexa on board have now been sold, so that's 100 million devices with Alexa, Google says that over 900 million more devices than Alexa. So Google Assistant will soon be on a billion devices. That's incredible. And that does include phones and Android devices, whereas the Alexa things are actually people actively choosing Alexa. Google stuff, the Google Assistant is on the phones. So also, they said the next billion are likely to come in developing markets, which always I'm excited about for those of us who want to reach readers globally. And of course, we're seeing we've seen the first drop in iPhone predicted sales, and whereas the Android kind of system is in so many in the developed world. They've also just announced that Google Assistant will be in Google Maps, which means it's inside even more devices. So I use Google Maps on my iPhone. So I'll be able to just use, if I'm using Google Maps for directions, then I'll be able to speak to the Google Assistant to do that. At CES, there were lots of partnerships announced as well. So Google Assistant, similar to Alexa, will be in TVs, speakers, kitchen things and cars. What is interesting is that the assistant speaks multiple languages, nearly 30 languages in 80 countries, as well as being multilingual. So you can speak in different languages from home. So if you speak Spanish and English or whatever, you can speak both languages and it will understand. Duplex, and they announced all these different things, but enables you to have more complex conversation. So for example, booking a restaurant. Then a couple of other things which are kind of amazing on the translation. There is a new interpreter mode rolling out from now, January 2019, aimed at helping hospitality in particular. So a German speaking guest in an American hotel wants to book a table at the restaurant, the interpreter will help them speak to each other. So this interpreter will support 27 languages and will only be available on the Google Home and Google Assistant type devices. And then also, The Verge announced that Google Translate will be used for over 400,000 Wikipedia articles integrated with their own translation tool. So this side of translation is words, so word translation. And when you think about how the AIs are trained, it's very much on data. So I think this is interesting. What the software does is a kind of first pass of translation, and then a human editor revises it. And of course, on Wikipedia, you've got the smart power of the community, because there's so many community editors. So what I see, that, and this is going to be free for Wikipedia and integrated with their own translation tool, I think this is incredible, because this is a training exercise on translating words. So I'm really excited. Again, you know, I'm always excited about this type of thing, but this particular platform scenario is interesting, because I mean, we actually have an Alexa and a Google Home because we wanted to try them both. And to be fair, we don't really use either of them very much, but we wanted to play around with them. So, but as things increase and the integration increases, there's more and more stuff that you would use them for. And since Jonathan got an Apple Watch, he's using voice a lot more. So I haven't even mentioned Siri, because Apple don't do CES, I think. Don't quote me on that. But anyway, we are, as we'll discuss in the main bulk of the show today, this type of smart assistant is really interesting, and there will be more and more different kinds. So yeah, as I learn more about voice first SEO and the ramifications of things like translation AI, I will continue to keep you in the loop. So my personal update, well, it has been an audio week, to be honest. The QA for Valley of Dry Bones is done. It's up with ACX for the final checks. And also, I'm going wide with this one and have started my getting my audio out there. I've done the Successful Author Mindset is already wide, and I have a few that I sell from my own website, like How to Market a Book and Business for Authors. But going on Findaway Voices means getting the audio on places like Google Play into Storytel, which I am more than excited about. I mean, seriously, that's just brilliant. So Storytel, if you don't know, is the company that is kind of taking the rest of the world by storm. Audible really does dominate in some markets, but Storytel is kind of moving into the other markets. So I want to be there. So with Valley of Dry Bones, I'm using my existing narrator for the Arcane series, Veronica Jaguer, who's fantastic. So that is coming soon, hopefully. I also went through all my audiobooks and checked all my contracts. So this is something that you can do to check your IP and how much intellectual property you are actually getting out there. This is part of my becoming a better publisher this year. I mean, I was just slapping myself on the wrist, because I have two other books, because I put one, I put Mindset on Authors Republic, which again is another fantastic service. Now I'm going to use Findaway. I've really connected with those guys. They're going to come on the show as well. But basically, you can, and also you can get a free, they waive the joining fee if you go through Draft to Digital. So if you are on Draft to Digital, you can click their link through to Findaway. So I've checked all the contracts, and I've just requested one non-exclusive, well, sorry, one book that's in the exclusive contract to be reverted. And then there's two more coming out of the exclusivity period in the coming months. So basically, if you signed an exclusive ACX deal for the 7 years, but you own the rights completely, so as in it's not a royalty share deal, you can move to non-exclusive after a year. And that's what I'm doing. I want to get audio onto Google. I feel like this discussion about Google Assistant, I need to get audio onto Google. So that's a big deal for me. So I've been through everything. I've checked all my contracts. I've looked at the books that need doing an audio, which I'm planning to do this year. myself, because I'm also excited about this. I have also recorded my three stories for 1,000 Fiendish Angels, three short stories inspired by Dante's Inferno, and I am editing them. And the wonderful Daniel Van Workhoven, who is my podcast audio tech, is going to master them, and then these will go wide as well. So it's been a big week for sorting out intellectual property around audio and also creating more intellectual property assets. So I'm super happy about that. And this is part of what I said at the beginning of the year, and my sort of my plans is to not just rush into the next creation project, to make the most of what I have so that more people find me in different ways. And also I'm so very much learning, about my writing from reading 1,000 Fiendish Angels. I mean, I'm editing the stories substantially for voice. And a lot of you have asked me about this, and I probably will do another mini course on audio and voice and dictation and narration and all of this stuff, because I think this is my big focus this year. So that may come out at some point. But yeah, I've been working a lot on audio this week and yeah, loving it. So thanks for all your emails and tweets and comments this week. And of course, you can always tweet me at the Creative Pen with a double N. And I'm on Instagram at JFPenAuthor if you fancy. I'm wearing these brilliant red slippers that I just bought. My old slippers have loads of holes in. I wear slippers around the house. I just got these brilliant red slippers, and I just put a picture on Instagram with this really good company that do lovely slippers. So if you like bright red, red is one of my favourite colours. So yeah, anyway, point being that I do put stuff on Instagram that is a bit random, but also from my travels. So yes, thank you to people sending me messages on Instagram and doing the @ thing and commenting and all of that. I'm enjoying Instagram a lot right now. So thanks to Laura, who sent a lovely email saying I am still useful to the author community. And I really appreciate that. I've actually printed that email out, sticking it in my journal because it made my day. Thank you, Laura. Karen says, running while listening to the roundup, and sent a picture before her run. Really good to see you out and about, Karen. Michelle says, just started listening to Mark McGuinness episode. Funny you say you're taking up spin because it's cold. I'm from California, but loving brisk nature walks here in the UK. Yes, so the spin, partly because it's cold, but also partly I don't actually own a bike right now. And also just trying to get back into cycle fitness before getting a bike and basically killing myself. So yeah, that's why. And I have now done 10 days of spin, and yeah, definitely enjoying getting back into that. And Anna Proofing says, listening to the podcast while I finally update my editor blog. I promise to be better at blogging this year. And of course, content marketing, which I talk about a lot, is fantastic for your business. If you do things like proofreading or editing or any kind of services or any kind of product, I still believe blogging is awesome. And finally, Julia V sent a lovely snowy picture, today's walk, as I listened to the wrap up. So thank you for that, everybody. And as I said, you can tweet me at the Creative Pen or leave a note on the blog post that goes with the episode. So today's show is sponsored by my own books, audiobooks and courses for authors. So if you want to take your author career to the next level in the coming year, then I definitely have something for you in my box of tricks. For example, How to Market a Book, which covers all the principles of marketing, as well as strategies and tactics that go way beyond just ads. I was talking to someone recently, and the sort of pervasive idea that ads are the only form of marketing right now, which is just not true. In fact, ads are only one chapter of How to Market a Book, which is over 70,000 words. So it's a chunky book. So marketing is a lot more than just ads. And of course, How to Market a Book is in audiobook, print, ebook, and the audiobook. go get that because you love audio. Also, struggling with self-doubt or wondering how to deal with writer's block or just needing some reassurance this year, which is the other thing I've been getting emails about recently, check out the Successful Author Mindset, which is aimed at helping you on the roller coaster journey of being a writer. And then, of course, I've got courses, how to write a novel, how to write nonfiction, content marketing for fiction, which I am about to update with a video. In fact, by the time this goes out, there should be another video there. And Business for Authors, also an audiobook, which I narrated. So there you go. And you can go to thecreativepen.com and there are links there for books, audiobooks and courses. And of course, if you are a patron, you get 10% off my courses with the discount coupon sent out to you, or email me if you missed it, joanna@thecreativepen.com if you are a patron. Right, so thank you to everyone supporting the show on Patreon. Thanks to new patrons, Kelly Power, Shelry Holton, Jordan Shaver, Carrie Owens, Petra Huck or Hucky, Gabby Van Holteren, Tom Namey, Heather Sunseri. Hello, Heather. Met Heather at NINC. Charles Eugene Anderson, Julie Broad, Gary Suave and Elizabeth Hooper. I really do appreciate your support on Patreon. As I say, you know, it demonstrates you enjoy the show and want it to continue. And also, although I do have other sponsorship for the show, my time is supported by you guys. So, and you know, obviously to do the type of research I do for the introductions, I do spend a lot of time monitoring things to try and give you the best information. So if you do find the show useful, you can give like just a coffee a month or even a couple of coffees a month if you fancy. And you'll get the extra monthly Q&A audio, which I'll be recording soon for January, including the backlist. So you get tons more useful audio if you sign up at patreon.com/thecreativepen. Right, thank you. Let's get on with the interview. Today, I'm here with Bradley Metrock. Welcome, Bradley.
Hi, Joanna. Thank you for having me. It's an honor.
Oh, it's great to have you on the show. Just a little introduction. Bradley is the CEO of Score Publishing, which runs Digital Book World and the Alexa Conference, as well as the VoiceFirst.fm podcast network. He's also the host of This Week in Voice podcast, which discusses advance in voice technology. And I'm a listener, so I'm very excited. But Bradley, before we get into it, just tell us a bit more about you and how you got into publishing and voice tech in particular.
Sure. You know, how much time you got?
a potted history.
I guess I'll start back in 2008. I started a completely unrelated business that was in the video game retail and entertainment space. And in 2013, I sold that business and wasn't able to rush into anything new. And I had always had an interest in publishing. During that video game business, I actually released a book that sort of was strategic to help that business. And I'd always been interested in publishing. I'd always been interested in this idea that the gatekeepers that used to control publishing are gone. And if they're not gone, then they're greatly diminished. They're only in your way if you choose that to be the case. And so in the aftermath of selling that business, I started learning some new skills and picking up some things, you know, that were related to publishing. I started learning Apple's publishing software, iBooks Author, which I found fascinating and I still do. And used that to create some content, some interactive books, and then got engaged by some companies to do that. And one thing turned into another, and all of a sudden we're creating some interactive content now. And we have a new company now. And so we just called it Score Publishing. And so we were off and running. And as it turned out, a lot of these companies that we were working with to create interactive content, they started, you know, these are forward-thinking, progressive, you know, companies living on the frontier of tech. What is up with Alexa? What is the deal? what is the deal with voice in general? Should we be doing anything about it? I'm getting asked this. I said, well, shoot, why are you asking me? I don't know. But the more I found out about it and investigated it, the more intrigued I became. And at this point, we're into 2016, you know, now, and even toward 2017, we had sort of galvanized the community of people and companies using iBooks Author. We had been running an event called the iBooks Author Conference for some time, and that had grown in popularity. But we thought, you know, why don't we have something called the Alexa Conference? Why don't we try it out and see if anyone shows up? And we were blown away by the people that showed up. And one of the people that showed up, one of the original speakers that we booked for that was HarperCollins. And HarperCollins, at that point, you know, Alexa was brand new, but they were experimenting with, it wasn't even called a flash briefing at that point in time. And that's what they had managed to create. And they were one of the first speakers that we had. And we, despite no promotion, we had people traveling from overseas to attend. And so, hey, we thought maybe there's something to this. And so we continued to learn more about voice. We continued to grow the Alexa Conference. We then, in 2017, started Voice First FM, because I had always wanted to start a podcast. And just the stupid way I do things, I said, why don't we just start a podcast network? Doesn't that sound like a bright idea? And it turned out to be a pretty good idea. But, you know, sometimes we take on, you know, we bite off a little bit more than we can chew. But the result of it has been that we've had this incredible front row seat to this emerging technology that's changing the way every business works and the way every individual interacts with a computer, and the way our children and our grandchildren are growing up thinking about computers, their entire notion of what a computer is and does is different because of voice. And so I'm fascinated by it. We were along the way, you know, with the growth of the iBooks Author Conference, we wanted to have a bigger publishing conference. Something broader, something that spans what we would later call the wide world of publishing. Mm. And we originally approached Tim O'Reilly, who we've had as a guest on Voice First FM and who we know, about acquiring Tools of Change, which used to be a big publishing conference. That was not possible. So then we went to F&W Media and we inquired about acquiring Digital Book World. And there's a whole interesting story to that, which is still, you know, we still have a relationship with them. That's a good relationship. But we ended up being able to acquire that. We ended up being able to take it over, turn it around and revitalize it and breathe new life into it. We've added a voice component, but we've also opened it up to everybody else, including self-published authors. We sit heading into 2019 at a pretty good place.
It is really interesting. And I love to hear you talk about this because I feel so often, I think many people feel that publishing and technology, you know, have this slightly, like there's a time lag. And I mean, I wrote articles on the Future Book like 3 years ago about, you know, some of this stuff and didn't really get, you know, it was like no one was interested. And it's so, I just love to hear you talk about this stuff in this entrepreneurial, independent way, basically. And as an entrepreneur yourself with your own company. So I'm very excited, but many people listening are not as geeky as you and I about this type of stuff. So I wonder many people will have heard of Alexa, but maybe you could just give us like a state of the nation. What is the kind of current state for voice tech, especially sort of with a slant towards authors and writers?
Sure. So this has been a long time in the making. Long before, even before I was born, this has been in the making, much less before I ever started paying attention to it. But the first step with this was computers had to be able to understand us at least as well as a human being can understand us. because until you cross that threshold, a lot of stuff really doesn't make sense in terms of investing in the technology. Mm-hmm. So, you know, recently in the last 5 years, give or take, you know, a little bit more recent than that, according to some people, we have crossed that threshold to where, you know, science tells us that human beings are capable and on average understand and comprehend about 95% of what another human being says to them. That's our throughput. That's our capability on average of understanding and recognizing speech. Computers now have gotten to where they are at above 99%. So Alexa is Amazon's voice assistant. Voice assistant is the phrase that's been given to these artificial intelligences, for lack of a better term, that receive your voice commands and then orient you in the right place. Right now, very strictly along the guidelines of what you say. If I say, I want to listen to the Creative Pen podcast, it's going to play it. It's going to play it now. But maybe what I, so it's going to follow along strictly what I say. Hmm. Now, really, we're rapidly approaching the point where that this is far from the end. This is just the beginning. Really, what we're striving for is not just recognition of speech, but what we're striving for is understanding of intent. Maybe my intent was when I said play the Creative Pen podcast to play it at a low volume because I'm working on something else. Maybe my intent was play the most recent episode because I'm caught up. Maybe my intent was I missed one episode 3 weeks ago, and that's the only one I've missed. Maybe my intent was something else. When computers, it's already happening with stuff like Google, and I mean, it's controversial that computers understand us as well as they do. But, you know, once at some point there will be sort of an inflection point, and we will allow these voice assistants to have deep context on us. And so if I say play the podcast, I need to say nothing more for the computer, whatever voice assistant we're talking about, Alexa, Google Assistant, Siri, Microsoft's Cortana, Samsung's Bixby, whatever, will understand and just implicitly know that I've listened to these other ones. And what I'm really referring to is something I never even had to say. And that's where we're going. Now, how does that tie into publishing? Well, it ties into publishing in every way imaginable. If you're a self-publisher, or if you're anybody creating content, see, we really don't use the term self-publisher for digital book world. I like to use the phrase independent publisher.
So do I.
Yeah, because frankly, self-publisher, all you're doing is telegraphing that, you know, you're a sole proprietorship, you're a one man army. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. Really, independent publisher captures it a little bit better, in our opinion, because, like, look at what you've done. You have a whole series of books. They're sitting on that shelf behind you. If you didn't know any better, you might be a 50-person company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what difference does it make? And so that's why independent publisher captures everybody without any of the stigma that still some like to associate with not being published by a major publisher with a book that shows up in Barnes & Noble or whatever. Hmm. But for anybody publishing content, whether you're publishing fiction, nonfiction, whether you're publishing long form articles to the internet, whether you're publishing audiobooks, podcasts, whether you're publishing videos to YouTube or any other website, the day is almost here where, think about how you find a video now, or how you find content now, or someone learns about your book now. There's only so many ways that that happens. Either another human being one human being tells another human being about your books, or Google tells another human being about your books, or social media tells another human being about your books, or there's a few other things. Of course, live events are a huge part of it. That's a big part of our business. There's some other things to sort of round out that pie chart. It's about to be completely rewritten because voice is about to step in. You're not going to, sooner than any of us think, and this is why Google is so worried, and why Google Assistant is everything to them. They've seen Alexa and Siri and these other things. The days of you going to a browser and going to google.com or just starting on your homepage or whatever by default and typing something in as a query and then having to understand the semantics of, well, do I put it in quotes? Do I need a minus? If I search for voice technology, am I going to get stuff related to the opera? How do I segregate out results? All that is going to go. And what you're going to be left with is computers that have all of your data, everything you've ever done, the purchase you made on Amazon yesterday, the purchase you made on Amazon 3 years ago, the podcast you listened to yesterday, the video you watched 3 years ago, the conference you went to a month ago, all the birthdays in your calendar, that meeting you missed 2 months ago, that email sequence with a friend that was 5 years ago, everything. And so the concept of discoverability, and I wrote a big article about this last year that was by far the most read thing that I wrote, and it was on digitalbookworld.com and got picked up some other places, is that how we discover books and how we discover new content in general will be filtered through this voice assistant. So soon, next year, 3 years, 5 years, doesn't really matter. You got to be thinking about it now. I will say, Alexa, I have some vacation coming up next week and I need a new book to read. What should I read? Oh, well, you know what? There's a new book by that science fiction author whose book you read last year. That new book came out last month. You could read that. That podcast you just listened to 2 weeks ago in your car, that author has released 3 books in the last 2 years, one of which managed to chart on the New York Times bestseller list. That's an option. 4 years ago, when you went on your beach vacation, you read this book while you were sitting at the pool. You haven't touched that in a while. That's an option. Or we saw you Googling this stuff about starting a new business. There's a great new book that was featured in the news recently about entrepreneurship, and maybe that's of interest as well. There you go. I mean, that sort of information, which is right around the corner, there's no more going to Google. And that information that I just regurgitated orally, screens are going to be part of this. This is not an audio only future. This is what we call a voice first future. So as opposed to interacting with computers primarily with the QWERTY keyboard or primarily with swiping and tapping on a glass screen on your mobile, the primary way that you'll look to interact with computers will be voice first. And then if that's not sufficient, then another interface second, and you'll have screens and visual stuff to go along with that the majority of the time. So this age of voice assistants and these nascent AIs, which is what they are, it just should cause anyone creating content that they hope one day gets read. If you don't care, if you write something you don't care if it gets read, stop. I don't know why you're watching this. If you want someone to read it, then you have to care about how it's discovered. and it's changing right before your eyes right now.
Yeah. And I know some people listening will be kind of scared by this, possible future. And I agree with you. I think it's definitely the way it's going, especially in a time when people are saying they want to spend less time on screens. So, and I hear parents saying, oh, I don't mind how much time my kid spends with Alexa because it's reading them audiobooks or they're playing voice games or whatever. And it's like, oh, okay, this is interesting. But I wanted to ask you about this discoverability because several people have said to me they can't actually find this podcast on Alexa, and I have thus found that they should be using TuneIn or AnyPod, and I'm going to put links in the show notes as to how people can do it. But the discoverability on these devices right now does seem quite basic. Even with over 50,000 Alexa skills, it's still quite difficult. So thinking forward, so 10 years ago I started putting blogs on Google and now my site gets found. How do I start now to make sure I'm found? Is it Google snippets? Is it skills? What is it that we can start building so that we are found when people ask Alexa or Siri or whatever what they should read?
You know, if you knew the answer to that,
be a millionaire.
You'd be pulling in more money than you already are pulling in. And if the answer, the truth is that if that answer were known, if I knew that answer right now, it really wouldn't be relevant for long because it all changes so quickly. When I get asked that, I mean, the biggest thing you can do is, you have to, I guess the way I would phrase it is you have to be comfortable with the tech giants. Now, Facebook is a different animal. Facebook is garbage, my opinion. They're not to be trusted. They haven't earned the right to participate in this voice landscape and to have the data that is required to participate in the ways that I've described. They haven't earned it. It's a bad company. Amazon, the entire company was formed around a customer-centric model to where they're all about the customer. You can argue, you don't like what they're doing, and that's fine. There is no argument that their entire existence and history is built around serving the customer. And that's from lowering price as much as possible, even to the point of breaking entire industries, making returns easy, all sorts of stuff. So that's a company that most people feel like you can trust. Now, we'll find out if we're wrong. Google, the verdict's out. But in general, the company had a slogan that some point, don't do evil or something.
Don't be evil, but that's not theirs anymore.
So that's, we'll give them a shot. Apple tends to value privacy. They're having a lot of problems, but they tend to value privacy and data security. You have to get comfortable with these companies because if you do not participate in their ecosystems, you will not be found. Mm. So the biggest things you can do is get over the problems you have with Amazon and get your books on Amazon, period, end of sentence. Google, get over the problems you have with Google and pay close attention because Google's making a lot of investments right now into the publishing space, and they're doing it kind of quietly. They're making huge investments into audiobooks. They have rolled out something called Talk to Books this past year, which I wrote another article about, which is a huge deal. They're doing, and then what they're doing with podcasts, they're investing heavily in that space. And keep in mind, podcasts are really nothing but an audiobook formatted a little bit differently. They're the sister of an audiobook. So you've got to get into both of these ecosystems. Apple is a little bit less important. You can get in there too if you want. That's probably a good idea too, because Siri is a little bit behind, but it looks like, you know, they're making the investments to catch up. Mm. The biggest thing you can do is get into these ecosystems and plant the flag, because what's happening is, like on the Google side, you know, I assume that this podcast is available through Google Podcasts. I don't know. If it weren't, you would want to be there, because Google is actively transcribing on their own, privately, telling no one, all podcasts that are in their ecosystem. And the reason they're doing it is because Google Assistant has to be able to parse that a little bit easier. And so they're doing it as a means of sort of bridging that gap with voice. There's a lot of these different things that these big players are doing on their own with the content that people have injected into their systems to prepare for the future. And while I can't tell you, you know, here's what you need to do to be number one on Alexa, tell somebody, hey, tell me a great publishing podcast. How do we make sure that's the creative pen? Even Amazon couldn't tell you that. Mm. But where you start is warming up to the beast and diving in, because that's, I mean, like it or not, you know, that's either you're going to choose to play in the sandbox or you're not. And if you're not, hey, that's fine. You just need to have something else. And I don't know what something else is.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because my play with this is still content. So it really is more audiobooks, more podcast episodes, because I feel that our voice, the way we talk with podcasts, is very different to an audiobook. So if someone is searching, asking one of these voice assistants for something, they're going to use the way we talk as opposed to the way we would type. So I think podcasting, audiobooks, you know, transcripts of things should, in inverted commas, play into the way this voice search works. I also read that Google's using snippets quite a lot to answer specific questions. So doing, you know, making sure you have a snippet plugin for, you know, your website, that type of thing. These are not hard and fast tips, I guess, but, you know, any thoughts particularly on audiobooks? Because many authors are thinking about that too.
You know, I think, first of all, an audiobook should exist. I mean, let's just start with that. if you're going to the trouble of writing, that science fiction epic that you've been wanting to write your whole life, or your memoirs, or, you know, a how-to on carpentry or whatever it is that you want to write. Because as you know, I know you know, everyone's got a book in them. Mm-hmm. And it wants to come out. And we're so fortunate to live in an age where it can. If you're going to invest that time and the money and the mental bandwidth, and you're going to make the sacrifices necessary to bring your book to life, it is unfathomable that you wouldn't go further and release an audiobook for it. Maybe in the past, there was a question about that. That question's gone. I mean, and you can narrate it yourself. You know, at Digital Book World, we had some great vendors there. Who do a fantastic job providing the tools necessary to play in the sandbox. Find a way Voices is a big one. Mm-hmm. We just used them to release our own audiobook, which was our compilation of snippets and blur excerpts from our podcast. But whether it's yourself narrating or somebody else, you got to make that happen. That's number one. So assuming that you've gotten to that point, then you've got some interesting options. And I love the idea of taking an audiobook. There's an argument on whether you would want to fully transcribe. You know, a lot of people narrate audiobooks and they sort of riff over the top of it. Mm. It's not a verbatim reading. It's a reading plus, you know, there's extra content in there. And
most with nonfiction, I don't know if that would ever happen with fiction, because that's
you're right, nonfiction. Yeah. And so, you know, you could take, you know, perhaps a transcription of that and put it somewhere on the internet. But I think what's more interesting is finding a way, and there's a few different ways to do it, but finding a way to take an audio excerpt of that audiobook and then either append it to the end of a podcast that you create yourself, mm. or append it to the end of someone else's podcast, or, you know, another thing that's coming real soon is vastly superior monetization of podcasts, because that industry is evolving very rapidly. You know, I think one thing we're going to see people do is serialize audiobook content across podcasts, across podcast distribution vehicles. So, and you're already seeing it a little bit with companies like Serialbox. You know that company?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I mean, when I came into one of the reasons I started podcasting 10 years ago was Podiobooks, which was podcasting audiobooks. Nice. That's how I found a lot of people. So that type of stuff has been around for 10 years. But of course, it wasn't mainstream because we didn't have the smartphones. So it's sure. like you said earlier, this stuff has been around. It just hasn't gone mainstream because the tech hasn't been there. But I do want to ask you on audiobooks as well, about the narration, because we've been talking about us speaking to the AI and the AI doing stuff, but what about AI synth? Like, I've been looking at voice synth stuff where, you know, I have enough of my voice around now that a voice synth should be able to take and do my voice, and they've done it with Trump and Obama and all of that. What do you think about the AI narration possibly taking over from human narration when it comes to audiobooks, but also even like replacing you and I on our podcasts or something?
And people just don't realize it. So we've got the Alexa conference coming up in 2 weeks here in the United States. And so this is, you know, this type of thing is top of mind. You referenced, you know, Trump and Obama. I think what you're referencing, there's a company called Liarbird.ai. And for people who haven't checked this out, they should. It's Lyre, like an instrument, Lyrebird.ai. And that company, they're far from the only one, but they're at the forefront of creating, I guess I would call it emulation technology. And the way their technology works is that they can, I believe I'm regurgitating this correctly. They probably improved it since I've looked at it because it's moving quickly, but they can take 45 to 60 seconds of you speaking, any snippet of this. You don't have to be reading something specific with different phonemes. You can be saying anything for across 45 to 60 seconds with the way their tech works. And with that, they will reproduce your voice to such accuracy that most people will not be able to tell the difference. Mm. And this is already being used. This technology made an appearance first in music studios. So you've got traveling musicians, rappers or whoever, and, you know, they'll be on tour and they'll want to hit the studio. So after they play one night, this happens in Nashville all the time, they'll play a show. And then at 2 a.m, they'll go to Music Row and hit up a studio and they'll record. And then they'll be out the door to the next city at 7 a.m. or whatever. Now, in that scenario and almost any other, if an audio engineer is capturing that, and then after the fact, they realize, oh, shoot, we didn't get this, you know, or there was a problem with this audio, or we need something else. The rapper's not coming back to town for another 6 months. So what are you going to do? I don't know what you're going to do, but now you don't have to worry about it because they have technology that can take it the rest of the way. And it's being used now it's being used more and more by the same studios, the same audio engineers, but in the trade / big publishing audiobook production process. So Hillary Clinton, good example. She narrated her whole audiobook. And you know, her time, like so many other people's, is valuable. You know, she can sit there and she can read it, and she's old also, by the way. So, you know, she can sit there and read her book. But when you're producing it and you're editing it, if you realize, wait a minute, those words could have been enunciated a little bit clearly. Wait a minute, there was a problem. The computer didn't save this right. Or wait a minute, whatever. Now you can use technology to prevent her from having to come back into the studio and just sort of emulating her speech in a way that no one would ever know.
Super excited about this. I mean, one of my ideas around this is around licensing a voice and voice branding. You know, a lot of people have asked me to narrate audiobooks, and I'm like, you know, you can't pay me enough, to be honest. It's hard enough to narrate my own. But it's, you know, something that I think, you know, a narrator can sell audiobooks beyond the author sometimes now. Like people really, like my husband loves Stephen Fry, you know, the British actor Stephen Fry. His voice is a brand. So, sure. I mean, this type of licensing and voice branding, which is again why, you know, and you have, I think, quite a distinctive voice, and clearly I do now after years of doing audio, and people hear it and they recognize you. So do you think this kind of voice branding, you know, voice licensing would be something?
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah, and if you, it for sure. Already, people are inquiring about stuff like this. You know, like a Morgan Freeman, or you know, people with recognizable like voices on the celebrity scale. and it's possible that there's been some sort of transaction that sort of has set a price for it. But if there has been one, I'm not aware of it. I think it's going to be very interesting to see how these roads converge, because we're there. We're at the point where a Stephen Fry, you know, a Morgan Freeman, a whoever can have their voice, they basically sell their voice as if they were selling a font on the computer. And that's,
it's kind of scary because that, you know, like, authors have moral rights to their work, you know, and don't want it to be used in a way that reflects badly on them. And, you know, you can see the problems with this, but it's still exciting. But you brought up there, you said, we're there already. But I feel like one of the big things on the horizon is 5G, which is, you know, 2020, probably 2021. And then looking at the global sense, you know, it will kind of be rolling out. So from what I understand about 5G, it's going to be a step change in technology. So do you see that there'll be an even bigger tipping point with a sort of 5G? And what are you looking forward to then?
Oh, yeah. 5G is very important in the computer, the continued evolution of that kind of infrastructure. It impacts voice, just to start there, in the in reducing the latency of sort of the voice transaction. You know, you ask Alexa something, and it's going to take us a couple of seconds to parse that and receive it back. And there are obvious implications for reducing that time, but then there's very not obvious and very unintuitive implications for reducing that time as well. And it will just allow that type of computing to flourish even more. But it will also have a great impact on things like autonomous cars. You know, that's just another good example where you pretty much have to have technology that performs a little bit better than what we've got right now for the data throughput necessary for cars not to be running into each other all over the road, you know, if something goes wrong or whatever. So, I mean, there's several examples about how it's going to impact our life, but, you know, I'm bullish on it as well. I think it's going to be great.
Yeah. And I mean, even autonomous cars, I mean, people won't necessarily look at screens. They will probably be listening more. So autonomous cars means more people listening.
Autonomous cars will be the best thing for self-publishers that has ever happened in the world. This is not a joke.
Tell us why.
I'm going to. So think of all the time that drivers, think about all the time that drivers spend driving. Mm. Think about all the time that goes into the daily commute to and from. All the time where if a family's on vacation, you have 2/3, 3/4, 4/5 of the family able to do things and not the whole family together. When you have autonomous vehicles and no one's really sure when they're coming, although, again, that's going to be sooner than people, you know, 10 to 20 years is what people say. You're going to see it sooner. For people creating content, when you open up the ability for people to buy content and consume content with not just their recreational time, but with their corporate time that they're spending traveling somewhere, time that people are on the road, you change everything. You change everything. Because think about how many more books you would read or I would read if we could read them in the car. And yes, you can play an audiobook in the car while you drive. Yes, that's absolutely true. Mm. But can you really be deeply engaged in the car or whatever? And then the fact that you are having to drive to and from work, it just shapes the whole rest of your day. It's I'm not the best at articulating it, but what I can tell you is that I'm a big believer in the fact that when you combine voice assistants and all the stuff that I talked about to begin the show, and this computer that understands you, that reduces the friction of you discovering new content that you're going to like, you combine that with this incredible new blue ocean of free time, you're going to get demand for content and willingness to pay for content because people have more time to consume it now than you've ever had before. It's exciting. And that's a whole other rat's nest of topics, but I am a big believer in that as well. And it will impact us during our lifetime.
Yeah, absolutely. And you and I, as I said at the beginning, we geek out on this kind of stuff. So just tell people, because we are out of time, there's so much we could talk about. So, you know, we'll have to do it again sometime. But tell people where they can find out more, what else you've got going on, where should they go to find out more about The Voice First and also Digital Book World.
I appreciate that. And thank you so much for having me on the show, by the way. If you want to learn more about what we do, if voice intrigues you, if anything on this show intrigues you, I would start with going to www.voicefirstevents.com. That is our portfolio of events that we do currently just within the United States. That's soon to change. And there will be some overseas popping in there, but Digital Book World's part of that portfolio. Digital Book World 2019, for anyone listening to the show or watching the show, would be, in our opinion, the best way, the best conference you could attend if you're going to attend one, because you will not only extend your network vastly, but you will open your eyes to all the different ways to leverage technology in the short term, that will maximize all the hard work, the blood, sweat, and tears you put into writing whatever it is you've written.
Mm, fantastic. And just tell people about your podcast as well.
So I host a show called This Week in Voice. I host a couple of different shows, but This Week in Voice is our flagship show. ThisWeekInVoice.com. You can learn more about it there or search on your favorite podcast provider. And we're in season three of the show now. It's a great place to get and stay current with what's going on in voice technology. We have a great panel of guests every week on the show while we're in season. If you go to voicefirst.fm, you will see all sorts of content hosted within our family of podcasts, within our network, stuff like Voice Marketing out in LA, VUX World, which is hosted out of London, Alexa in Canada, which is hosted out of Vancouver. We're fortunate to have a great group of folks producing content that is in the realm of voice. It has something to do with voice, at least. And that's a good place to check out, too, if you're interested in learning more.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for your time, Bradley. That was just fascinating.
Joanna, what you're doing is great. You're killing it. You've done such a good job creating your business, your platform for yourself. I'm honored that you invited me to be part of it.
So I hope you enjoyed the interview today with Bradley. And as ever, I am fascinated by the possibilities ahead for voice. And I'm personally doubling down on audio and podcasting myself in 2019 to position for the future, for the next 10 years. I'm building the next 10 years of my business with audio first. That's how seriously I'm taking this. Next week, I'm talking to Paul Jarvis about how to be a successful company of one, which is the name of his latest book, Company of One. And we question the whole idea of growth and expansion, which I really love this conversation. And Company of One is kind of where I think many authors sit. And, you know, some authors obviously are moving into a much bigger business, publishing companies, you know, doing a lot of collaboration. Personally, there's still, I mean, Jonathan and I are the only employees in our business. And then I work with lots of freelancers, which is awesome. But in so next week, really, Paul and I are talking about the business model of not growing a massive business with a massive exit and taking funding and all that type of thing. So I hope you'll find it useful. So happy writing week, and I'll see you next time. Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes and show notes available at thecreativepen.com/podcast. You can also get your free author blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at The Creative Pen or find me on Facebook at The Creative Pen. See you next time.